In the presence of God, Moses acts and speaks in an understandable manner. He answers God with a bold reply, but he asks two serious questions as well. And we get to be a part of a historic and important interaction between God and man. We are also fortunate witnesses to another such interaction in the forms of Jesus and Peter, as we heard from the gospel reading this morning. We'll take a closer look into Matthew 16 in a few minutes, but first, Moses. This is young Moses, watching his father-in-law's flock as he has for some time now. But for some reason on this day, Moses is compelled to stretch out the flock beyond where he usually keeps them, maybe for some greener grass that he has spotted, or a newly discovered small spring, and moves the flock closer to Mount Horeb. And here Moses encounters the burning bush and the presence of God. And God calls out his name. And when I was young and I heard my name called out, Paul, Paul, I knew I was in trouble. And I was soon to be dealt with sternly, especially when I heard all three of my names. I would start thinking, okay, of all the bad things I've done today, which of these did my mom or dad find out about? And yes, when he or she confronted me, I would look away. When God calls Moses, he bravely replies, "Here I am." I probably would have gone and hid from my parents. He acknowledges the holy presence and says, "Here I am." The Lord goes on to give Moses instruction on what he is being called to do, to liberate his people of Israel out of slavery in the land of Egypt, and then lead them, all of them, into the land of milk and honey, occupied by all those ites that you heard. And Moses then asks the first of his serious questions of God, "Who am I? Who am I to do all of this?" Now God tells Moses that he has seen and heard the affliction and suffering and heard the cries of his people. And God also knows Moses, the boy baby born and saved by his mother, raised by Pharaoh's daughter. God saw him kill the Egyptian, beating a fellow Hebrew, followed Moses as he fled to Midian, where he married the daughter of the local priest, and lived there working, tending the sheep. So Moses asks God, "Who am I to speak to Pharaoh in such a way on behalf of all the Israelites?" And so because he did ask this question, we find it understandable. When we feel God's presence and then hear that small voice moving us to do something, something of God's will that might be difficult, do we not deeply wonder, "Well, who am I? What can I do? What can I do to possibly make any difference in this world?" The other serious question that Moses asks God is, "What shall I say? Once I am there, what shall I say?" Okay, so Moses has done what God has asked of him. He's now in front of the Israelites before going to Pharaoh. What does he tell them to convince them of God's intervention into their suffrage, into their oppression? How does Moses then receive their trust and approval to pursue this insane task? God says to Moses, I will be with you. This was Moses' burning bush moment. I've been asked several times through my Christian life, hey, Paul, what's been your burning bush moment where you know that God is before you and in such a powerful force that you cannot deny that, yes, this is God and that he wants you to act? Maybe you've been asked this question too. What about Peter? Is this powerful moment with Jesus that we read in Matthew today his burning bush moment? Last Sunday's gospel, just a few verses before the one that was read this morning, we heard Peter proclaim that Jesus is the Messiah. And Jesus affirms this by blessing Peter and saying to him that his church will be built and will grow out from this deep faith that Peter displays. And Jesus tells Peter that he will receive the keys to the kingdom of heaven. So Peter knows that he is in the presence of God and that he walks with Jesus together on hallowed ground. And right after Jesus blesses Peter, he tells his disciples that he, Jesus, must suffer and die and be raised up. And when Peter hears this, he does not turn away or lower his head. He pulls Jesus aside from the others and looks God in the face and tells God to forbid this. Think of Jesus' shock at this moment that he has just blessed Peter, and now after his foretelling of how his ministry on earth must end, Peter rebukes him. So Jesus returns Peter's stern action with equal force and rebukes him and tells him that his denial of what must come about will not help. Peter is angry. He's angry because he loves Jesus and believes that Jesus is the Messiah. The Messiah that's to come and overthrow all evildoers and conquer the cruel oppressors and rule on earth. Not to suffer and be executed on the cross. Jesus acknowledges this anger and confusion, and so he adds to his disciples, the Son of Man will come in glory and then will repay what everyone has done. God will repay and have the final say. He and only he will judge all of humankind. That responsibility does not belong to us. Paul had his own burning bush moment on the road to Damascus. Thrown from his ride, and his eyes burned blind by the bright power of the presence of the resurrected Christ. And Paul talks to the Romans about God's repaying. We heard that in his letter reading today. He says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. That type of vengeance belongs to God. We are to bless and not curse those who persecute us, who do us bad. This is so hard. Some people can make me pretty angry, angry enough that I want to grab them and take them aside and give them a good shaking and cry, no, stop what you're doing. Change your ways. And Paul adds, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. But sometimes this is so hard. We had protests up in Pittsburgh, just like other cities in the country, back in May and into June. Streets were blocked off, businesses were closed. People marched and made speeches. Emotions were on edge. A police car was once set on fire. Our bishop was wondering, who am I? What can I do? What can I do to make a small difference? He released a statement to the press denouncing injustice and encouraging peace. That's a good first move. And then he sent out an invitation to other clergy in the city and inviting them, and they were from all denominations, and invited them to join him in an act of peace. And they went into the streets where there were protesters and police and barricades, and then walked among them and handed out bottles of water to whoever would take one. Now comes the hard part. I'm proud to be an Episcopalian. I have grown to love Christ Church. I thank God and you for this opportunity to serve, to be with you this summer. We have walked together in worship through the readings from the books of Genesis and Exodus, the letters to the Romans, and the Gospel of Matthew. We have worked together to continue God's work at Christ Church and in our community. Thank you, vestry members, Reverend Chad and his family, Father Russ Houtfield, for making all of this possible. Thank you all for your warm and caring hospitality, for sharing your stories with me, and letting me share my story with you, and for your dedication and love for Christ Church. And back on the eve of Pentecost, when all three of us were here, myself, Reverend Chad, and Father Hatfield, and during Father Chad's sermon, he looked at me and he said, I can't think of a better community to learn from. And he was absolutely right. I've learned so much from you. Thank you all, and peace always. Amen.